I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah. And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. And to the other side of the ether, he's the Benji to my Luther. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, IMF team member for hire.
I'm sure people can figure out what our topic is today based on your intro there. But I got to ask you, Wes, I've seen a lot, like a decent chunk of those movies, but not all of them, like I believe you have. Was that, was IMF ever spelled out prior to this movie?
What do you mean?
The full name of what IMF stands for.
Oh, what is it? International Impossible Mission Force? Yeah, yes. I don't think I ever heard that. Maybe it did. It's not a great name. No. I mean, it harkens back to a TV series. This is all kind of rebooted from a TV series back in the day. So
that's true.
If it's from like the 70s or 80s, which I feel like it was, that maybe falls in line with like kind of that cheesiness on the noseness of it.
That's fair. Okay. That definitely puts it in a different light.
It did give me a pause when they said it out loud in the theater. I was like, oh, I don't really like that.
I mean, my thing is like, just okay, it's fine if what you're saying makes sense. It checks out. Cool that you don't want to change it. However, why don't you just go and poke a little fun at it when you're talking about it?
I know. Yeah. And I think, you know, I was talking to Mac. He got some like kind of hokey vibes when he was watching this movie, that almost like it was poking fun at little campy vibes. But I'm not sure if I got the awkwardness, kind of the stiffness of it, but I didn't really see it as they were in on the joke.
I didn't either. No, I didn't get that.
I don't know. Different strokes for different folks.
Yep. That's why he's not on our podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Banned for life.
That's it. After last week winning, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, as a crow flies, they're winning the iconic movie draft.
Oh, geez. Did you beat me though?
No, I don't think I did. No one likes, you went for gasps. That's what you got. Went for... just to be devastatingly handsome, Mr. Steve Girl.
Yes, nobody appreciates someone like that.
No, I wouldn't, to be honest.
That's fair.
But we're not looking in the past, Nick. We're looking ahead to the future and to the present, because that is a gift. And this week we are back in action with an action-packed exit survey for Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part 1, starring Tom Cruise. And if you haven't seen my title on our YouTube channel at CMM Podcast right now on our live stream, a great porno movie title would be Mission Unpluggable Dead Rectum Part 1.
Wow. That is.
Huh?
Wow. I think you like Mr. Calling in life.
Or I'm a big fan of the porno movie title game. That's how I used to spend a lot of downtime when I was working in restaurants waiting for tables to come in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds kind of creepy now that I'm saying it out loud, but it was a fun game that I would play with myself.
I don't think that's creepy. I think it's just dudes being dudes. If anything, that's the ultimate dudes being dudes thing.
Yeah, Black Hawk Down, that sort of thing, Wanker Man, Forrest Hump, those are some of the favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wet Dreams May Come.
Wait, is that just one you made up from scratch, or is that...
it's a real movie starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Robin Williams called What Dreams May Come.
Oh, I've never heard that one.
Wow, he goes down to hell and to heaven. It's a kind of a crazy, surreal movie.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I have seen that one. Anyway.
Yeah, his wife commits suicide or gets into a car accident or something like that.
And... I did see that. Well, I forgot that was the name of it. Yeah. Okay. Never look at it the same.
There we go. You won't now, that's for sure. Mm. But before we get into all of that action, I'm not talking about porno movie titles. I'm talking about Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. But we were off last week, Nick, and for good reason. We were celebrating your last days as a bachelor. You're set to get married Labor Day weekend. Mm. So we all hunkered down in New Hampshire for a couple of days. Some of your baseball friends, your friends and family from home, and then Doc and I. Mm-hmm. Great time.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that. I had a blast. It was for me, I wanted it to just feel like what my college days were like when we were, day after a party, or maybe even we weren't throwing a party that weekend. It was just the boys hanging out at the baseball house at one of the guys with bigger apartment, doing that, and then just throwing in, like you said, the people from home, some family. And I'm glad that you felt that way. Like, and I know other guys that vocalized it too. And honestly, that made me happier than anything.
Great, great blending of people. There was no bad vibes, bad juju. I thought everyone blended really well. Had a great time. Kudos to the original Esk Fryer for buying us all the round of golf on Saturday or Friday morning, I should say. Great, great times. But this is kind of funny because you went, you and your lovely bride-to-be both had your bachelor or bachelorettes respectively on the same weekend. I go away to a bachelor party, of course, yours. And then the next weekend, my wife is hosting her bachelorette for her sister.
Crazy.
That was a couple of nights up in Boston there. And it's just funny now as we get to this age, late 20s, early 30s, late 30s for me. That's kind of to say. But, you know, the evolution of the bachelor party at that point, what guys want to do at that age versus what women do. It's like they all go out and have a great time. And like we just kind of hunker down and like, no, I want to get away from people and just drink and have a good time and play backyard games. And that's my speed at this point in life. So that's exactly what I would want out of a bachelor party at this point.
That's exactly. And I look at it as like, okay, like everybody, most of my friends are like career driven people. So you guys are all like wire to wire from Monday to Friday, like myself. Half of you that were there are parents. So you're dealing with like, and all young kids. So you're all dealing with that. You know, the youngest child of them all there. And it's like, I just want everybody to be able to just chill and go and do whatever they want. And we had so many options, so much room for activities.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was and a hot tub. So we, you know, it's crazy. We didn't even utilize the backyard. That's the wildest thing to me. I know it was on a hill, but
a little
still,
on a hill. Yeah. But so the front yard was great. You stand on a septic, you know, in a nice flat land.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, it was fun. It got a little classic Xbox in too, playing some NFL Street, which I will say, if there's one thing that was a letdown about my bachelor party, it was, and I know you had to take off at this point, but my brother and I think I've mentioned this to you before. My brother and I are like two of the best NFL Street players on the planet. Like I would
really,
he's a little bit better than me, but I do. Him. Yeah. He never lost in college in NFL Street. And like never lost a game to anybody except for me.
Mm-hmm.
We played each other. Now my buddies from college, they don't know like this history. Jake's buddies do. So when I play him, for them, it's like a whole big thing. And it's a, you know, blow for blow kind of game and everything. They're just like, can you guys fucking finish up this game, please? And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is like, if you knew how tough this game was.
They don't appreciate greatness.
They don't know. And I felt bad because like everybody else wanted to play like Halo and stuff. It's like, okay. But like, I wanted to have somebody like square one of us up in a game and see, this is how good we are. This is what we're talking about. But it's whatever. That was the tiny letdown of the weekend.
Now, I might be just using this for future Immaculate Grids on the football side of things, but wasn't Jeremy Shockey on the cover of that?
He was on the second one, but he was a beast in both games.
I would imagine. He seems like someone who would be a beast in that game. Yeah.
Dude, that game is – I absolutely love that game. And again, that was like a knockdown, drag-out fight between me and him. I ended up winning, thankfully. But and then we played – did you ever play Street Volume 2 back in the day, basketball?
Maybe I definitely owned Street Volume 1, but I probably played Street Volume 2.
We played a little bit of that too. I love that game. That little bit of Halo. This just classic Xbox, man, has some awesome, some bangers still.
Yeah. Yeah. The original Xbox, although I'm not crazy about the original controller. I'm glad you didn't have those up there, but that the big clunky ones there, it's tough to get your thumbs around.
Very strange.
Especially if you're a little kid.
Yeah. Those were, we still have one of them, but like they're still like they're awkward for sure.
I love it. But, you know, the bachelor party, not awkward. Glad you had a great time. Glad everyone had a great time. You know, it's nice to meet everybody. And it was nice to know that all the Northwestern claims are true. That was nice just to get like absolute confirmation there.
Oh, God.
Which is funny because after that weekend and like after all that stuff kind of broke, I think the headline that kind of came out of it was people who were talking about the, you know, the issue that happened. It's like, it's just a bunch of fat football players doing fat football things, or, you know, and I'm like, yeah, that's probably what it is.
It's wild how this whole thing is transpired. And honestly, at the party, it's like coach gets fired and it's like, oh
yeah,
wow,
yeah,
baseball
yeah.
coach. And it's wild seeing how everything's transpired.
I love it.
It's morphin' time. It's morphin' time.
Oh, I gotta click off the loop tracks. Oh man, can you imagine that? That would have been bad. But let's head over to trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this on Disney Plus, and are you caught up on Secret Invasion Season 1, Episode 5?
Fully caught up, but we're going to be, I think this is the finale for the first season is this week, right?
This is correct.
Okay, so I will have watched it all by the time we convene. I believe I've watched the first 3 episodes, if not the first 4, but it's been good. I've enjoyed it. I didn't doubt it was going to be a quality show. It's just that you know where I was kind of.
Did you watch the AI opening?
Nope.
No, you skip through it every time.
Yep, skip through it every time. I got no time for that. Okay. But yeah, it's been good. And like you said, like the whole espionage kind of stuff, it's exactly what we wanted it to be, what we expected it to be.
Yeah. It's a little bit of to call it a slow burn, maybe an overstatement or an understatement, I should say. It's kind of smoldering. It's moving at a snail's pace here, but I enjoy it. I enjoy all the accompanying research episode guides. If you go on YouTube and like Eric Voss, new rock stars that do the episode breakdowns, you gain a further appreciation for it because there's all these little things that kind of go into tipping the hand, like all the green in the room whenever there's a Skrull who's acting like a human, you know, like all the green in there is like a little bit of a tip off and all these little things, little choices that I think make the show a little bit better, aside from all the great acting performances, which I think is a strong suit of the show.
Yes, it has been a quality show. I think me binging it, where you talk about it being a slow burn, binging it has been helpful on my end.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And part of me wonders if this was, a 2.5-hour movie, would that be like this would still be good. I don't know if it's better or worse. We'll wait to the season finale for that, but I think this would be a watchable movie.
I'm still midway through. So like again, midway or maybe 4 episodes in, and there's like certain characters who've been introduced who like kind of need to get fleshed out more. I'm wondering, like right now I feel like I would disagree with that, but you're farther along, so I can see how like maybe things change a little bit. Maybe there are some details that you can kind of leave out, to progress things along.
Yeah. And again, I think it's probably better suited where it is, but I could see this being a movie and I think I could enjoy it here. I really like Gravik. I think Gravik's been good. And I love Sonia Farnsworth, the British intelligence lady.
Oh yeah. She's great. Olivia. Yeah. They're both awesome. They're both great. And Nick Fury's been very, very interesting seeing where he's at in all of this.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I like it. It's kind of like the old dog kind of getting back up, so very cool things, but in a similar vein, Nick.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this all over the internet. It's the Marvels trailer number 2, about 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes, 45 seconds or so. And we get a little bit more of what this movie's going to be. So we have kind of a Freaky Friday setup where the Kamala Khan, Proton, is that going to be her
Proton.
Name? Photon, thank you. And Captain Marvel all kind of switching powers whenever they use it. Dar Ben might be the villain there that they introduced or something like that, who is from that same Kree universe as Ronan the Conqueror. They have similar sledgehammer type weapons too. So there's going to be a callback to kind of that and her being a villain. I wonder where this is going to set up in the further MCU, where this is going to move the plot along, but it's an interesting trailer, a movie that I don't have great expectations for. I believe this is a November release of this year. But, it's a good-looking trailer. I liked everything they did with Photon and Ms. Marvel and their respective shows there and their debuts. So we'll see what goes on with that.
So it looks like right now the planned release date is November 10th. I'm assuming Marvel's not going to move off of that despite everything that's been going on. They should have it all done, clearly.
Yeah, if it's in the can, they got to put it out there, right?
Exactly. But I agree that – so I feel similarly, but it's slightly different. I didn't know what to expect when this first got announced. I think it got announced before the Ms. Marvel show, and then I ended up really liking that show. It's safe to say, I know we were pretty far apart on grading, but Ms. Marvel definitely beat your expectations, right?
Oh yeah. Again, it wasn't a show that was for me, but I really loved the actress who did it. I love the family aspects of the show. And there were some things that I did like, knowing that, it wasn't necessarily made for me.
Sure. And, but now that we kind of have seen what she's capable of, We know what Monica Rambeau is capable of, and seeing what, like, the way they cut that trailer, like you were talking about, they did a really good job. I love the song that they're using there. I forget the name of it, but it's obviously
Intergalactic by Beastie Boys. Yeah,
perfect. There you go, Beastie Boys. That's who it was. Mm-hmm. Okay, but she like Monica Rambeau really stands out in this trailer, and I think Brie Larson is going to be good for her too. I think, like, where we saw her in Endgame, and obviously she had a very small role in it, but I felt like her, like, slugging percentage there was good. Whereas, like, in Captain Marvel, we're like, it's a solid movie. It doesn't, like, something special. But I think here she's going to have she's going to be much better. So I have some expectations after seeing this trailer.
Yeah, and it looks good. I think the big key takeaway line is, I think it's, Photon. Wow, I keep screwing that up. Saying, like, explaining everyone's powers, right? She's like, I can see light. She, Captain Marvel can absorbs it, and then Miss Marvel makes it into matter or something like that, physical matter. So I think that's an interesting link that I hadn't really thought of it that way, but that makes sense on how they're all connected. So I like that.
Very true. And I will say too, another thing, like, with these kind of movies where you have, like, somebody who's, you know, you have, like, Carol Danvers, where she's not the old dog, but she's like the seasoned vet at least. Mm-hmm. And then you have the kid mixed in. Like, a lot of times we go into those situations, those kind of movies or shows, and it's like, okay, like, we're, especially as older individuals, not that old, but older, we appreciate, like, those older characters more. They've usually been around longer, or maybe they're a little more relatable, whatever. I will say with Miss Marvel, like, she did such a good job. And obviously in the trailer, it looks like it's more of the same from her. I think that's why I have some expectations on this too, not just because of Monica Rambeau, but I just feel like Iman Vellani, like, she's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm here for it. Also,
damn, son, where'd you find this?
I found this in theaters everywhere, nationwide. Barbenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice relationship name there, right? You know, like Bennifer, all that type of stuff. Box office update so far. So before we get to that, you saw Barbie.
I did see Barbie.
You had a double feature weekend.
Yes, I did. We went and saw Mission Impossible first, and then we saw Barbie. Of course, Mission Impossible, we're watching it for the show. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to see Oppenheimer at some point. Got to try and dodge these spoilers, my goodness. But yeah,
You don't know what happens at the end of Oppenheimer?
I mean, I just don't want to hear, like, I don't, have you seen it yet?
No. But they dropped the bomb.
But I think that doesn't happen at the end of the movie.
Oh.
See, that's
spoiler alert.
So there you go. So So anyways, but with Barbie, it was, you get a lot of the stuff that you're expecting, but then there's heart to it. It's very emotional. There's a lot to it. I really enjoyed it. Lauren really enjoyed it. I will say though that I thought of you when I was watching it because not because of anything to do with the movie, but because there are these punk kids in the front of the theater. And I'm like, Wes is always the one of the two of us that has, like, annoying people in the theater. There was these three punk kids, like, making, like, moaning noises, doing all this. Like, they're, like, probably, like, you know, 13-ish, sure, you know, give or take range. And it's just like, fuck you guys. And, like, Lauren was getting pissed. I'm like, do you want me to say something? They're all the way in the front. I'm all the way in the back. And I'm like, I'll do something, but, like, do you want me to? Somebody ends up going,
grab him by the ear, like, come here, young man.
No, I would have just yelled at him or something. And everybody in the theater wanted him to shut up too.
Sure. So,
somebody ended up ratting him out and they got kicked out. Like, and they didn't even put up a fight. They just left right away.
Mm-hmm.
Blown away.
Wow. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't take out the phone and go World Star and stuff like that. You know,
That's a good point. I probably should have. I hope
you got to be careful about stepping up in a crowd. You may get canceled.
Yes, that's a fair point. I like to think I would have thought about that a little bit more, but that is a very good point that you got to compose yourself in those situations even more so than I was already thinking of.
Yeah, that could be tough there. Well, I'm glad though you had a relatively good theater experience overall, because I went to go see Mission Impossible last night as a crow flies, and I went to the Mashpee Theater on the Cape there.
Mm-hmm.
But while I'm waiting in line, the it was almost a line out the door for Barbie. Everyone was all dressed like boys, girls, parents, all dressed in pink clothes. Mm-hmm. Huge kind of like a get ready, get to go out type of event movie, which I think is awesome. That's kind of rare these days.
Yep.
And I think while I'm waiting in line, they announced that the Barbie showing for that specific time was sold out. it's not a huge theater. It's more of an old school, smaller theater. Mm. But still, again, not something that I've heard of,
dude,
or seen in a long time. So
it was like, if you are gonna take Julia to see that movie, or if Julia's gonna go see it with her sister or whatever, mm-hmm. make sure you do it in advance. And we did a 2 o'clock on a Saturday showing. That's why we were able to get tickets. It was opening weekend, so it's tougher, obviously. But it was like, yeah, it's that and in Mario and in Spider-Man, mm-hmm. those three movies packed the house. I've seen all those up here in New Hampshire. Those packed the house. Nothing else has come even remotely close.
Yeah, I was trying to think of that. Those movies where like people get dressed up for. I could see Super Mario's doing that. Certainly the Star Wars or like a big MCU movie like Endgame. Maybe
Black
Wakanda
Panther.
Forever.
Wakanda Forever was the other one. Actually, that was the first one. I just saw that in a different theater. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a packed house, and there were a lot of chatty kids at that one.
It's fewer and far between these days, for sure. And it makes sense, because this is what amounted to the fourth largest box office weekend in U.S. history. Barbie comes in with 155 domestic. Oppenheimer has 80.5 domestic. I think they both exceeded opening weekend expectations. Barbie with $337 million worldwide, Oppenheimer with $174 million worldwide. And just to add into that, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning on second week, a little under $20 million, actually, 19.5. So that was a 64% second week drop off there. So a little below where you want to be there. 40 is a normal second week, and then 60. Mm-hmm. You know, you're starting to get in the bad range there.
Now, tell me if this is like a stale take or moderate. I'm curious where you think of what you think about this. So obviously we saw with Marvel and with DC, and we've heard like there's going to be some level of downsizing, but we're still going to be getting Marvel and DC content. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing with Mario, it comes out, kicks ass. We see Barbie comes out and it kicks ass. And everybody's talked about IP, right? And that's like a negative thing. But where we, I feel like, have felt the negativity has been on our end, has been just an oversaturation of content in the same world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like we feel differently about it from one another and from the rest of the DSG. I think we can all agree in some capacity that that has been a level of an issue. I wonder now if the next push is going to be, we're going to continue to do a lot of IP stuff like Mario, like Barbie and whatnot. But we're not gonna dig into those worlds heavy, but we're gonna keep sprinkling in all these different ones and then make it our own. That's gonna be the next shift.
Oh, I can see. Okay, so what you're saying, like maybe not have a connected universe, but you have a Mattel branch of whatever your studio is, and from there you have all the toys with the Transformers and Barbie and things like that you can do.
Yeah. Okay. And I think studios are going to be like, we want some of it, but we're not going to go crazy heavy in on Barbie. Like there may be a second Barbie movie, but it's just like the way they did it. I could see this being the only Barbie movie we ever see, period. Done.
Yeah. I can't imagine Greta Gerwig, the director, being in on sequels. She seems more of like that old school type of director who's like, no, this is, I got everything I wanted to say out of this story. Let me move on to a new challenge.
Exactly. So you could go, you have that. And then I'm trying to think like, then let's say just weird one, Stretch Armstrong, like go and do one movie for that. I'm not saying I want that, but just, it's the first thing
that
I think.
Be interesting. But hey, if we're making a freaking Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie, you know, like that's, I think you can make room for Stretch Armstrong and the Thundercats and some of the other stuff.
That's like what I mean. So right? Then Thundercats, that could be next. And that could, maybe that's animated, but these, mm-hmm. like they'll do one movie and that's it. And then if there's a heavy amount of demand for another one, like a Mario, then okay, we'll do another one. And that obviously is a universe that's very rich and you can do a lot there. But I don't, as much as, you know, maybe Mario, they'll go and do more in that universe. I don't think we're going to see more and more of that. It's going to be, we're going to have places, like a lot of places that can be starting points for universes, but then we'll see what happens from there.
Yes, yes. And last quick, real quick here, I skipped over this.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this all over the internet. Invincible Season 2, I think this came out of San Diego Comic-Con 2023, which was very lackluster. As far as being national waves, making big news and headlines, that sort of thing. Invincible Season 2, you are the man behind this show, mm-hmm. but you love it. So
I love this show.
Give me your thoughts on Invincible Season 2.
I thought this was I'm so glad that we finally got some stuff. Totally makes sense. Excuse me, that they do it at San Diego Comic-Con, especially with this being a slower year from a movie and show standpoint. I think looking at this first trailer, the way they incorporate Omni-Man in this is amazing. Speaking of which, Omni-Man's going to be in Mortal Kombat, and so is Homelander. Mm-hmm. That's friggin' nuts. I cannot believe that. I might buy that game. I am so fucking excited for those two. But anyways, so I thought it was I think it's very promising, and it looks like we're going to be getting some new characters mixed. And I've been going back and looking at some of the Invincible comics recently, and there's just the universe is so rich there, and I just think we're going to get different shit, obviously, but more of the same tone, a lot of wildness, and they're not going to let up. They can't. They moved stuff up in the first season from what happened in the comics, and it was so successful, and I think they're going to do more of that as best they can in this next season.
Well, you mentioned new characters, kind of pushing the envelope, kind of pushing the story, new ideas, some new voice roles to expect. Tim Robinson.
Yeah.
We all love him. Fan favorite. David Diggs, Leah Thompson, Ben Schwartz, Paul F. Tompkins, Callista Flockhart. That's a name right there. That's an immaculate grid name. Tatiana Maslany, Jay Farrow, Scoot McNairy, and Chloe Bennett will all have roles this season. So
nice.
Big names on top of the already big names that are headlining the show.
I just need Tim Robinson and Jason Mantzoukas' Rexplode to just go at it for like 2 minutes, just or a minute, just riffing back and forth. Bullshit.
Yeah, if you could, I forgot that he was in that Jason Mantzoukas. So if we can get Rexplode, Tim Robinson's character, and Ben Schwartz, I think those three all kind of go riffing off each other would be really, really fun. I hope we can see that. That's a good
Sonic
call.
And Ugly Sonic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
A superb choice.
So as much as it was slow at San Diego Comic-Con in terms of television and movies, there was a whole lot of comic book stuff that came out of it. Some friends of TLDR had some major titles announced. We had one writer who's going to be doing more Spider-Gwen stuff. We'll talk about that more on TLDR. As for this week's releases from Marvel, we got the Hellfire Gala 2023, so that's an X-Men book. There's a whole big shift in the X-Men universe coming up right now. After the era of Krakoa seems to be coming to an end, and this is an important issue to pick up if you want to get in on that event. From Image, I mentioned the friend of the show that's writing Spider-Gwen. Melissa Flohr is also the writer of The Dead Lucky. That is back this week, issue 7, as is New Burn issue 9, written by friend of the show Chip Zdarsky. If you want to learn more about that series, we actually had Chip on a while back. Both of these books we've talked about on TLDR with the writers of those series. From Boom, we have Alice Never After, which is the second arc of the Alice Ever After comic book. Of course, it's Alice in Wonderland, and it's basically if she Wonderland's actually a whole like manifestation of her mind, and
she's crazy.
Yes, she's on drugs. And at this point, she's undergone some other stuff. I don't want to spoil that for anybody who wants to read Alice Ever After. But again, had the creator on for that book as well. Then we have AWA. We have the first issue of Ribbon Queen, which I will say is a very fucked up title. It's Garth Ennis joint, so you know what you're getting with that. The creator of The Boys. As for TLDR this week, Joe's doing a Boom book. I'm doing an Image book. We will be talking some San Diego Comic-Con stuff. Also, just wanted to highlight this briefly. At the Bachelor Party, we've got a little bit of news from a listener. They caught that they had seen the cover of Year Zero, Volume Zero, which is an AWA Studios joint. They saw the collected edition of that and featured prominently right at the top, right under where it says Volume Zero. You can see a quote from TLDR Comic Book Club. Excuse me, TLDR Comic Book Club. So it was a proud moment for Joe and I. And
look,
I just wanted
that.
To share it with everybody. Yes.
Awesome. So, yeah. So name the title one more time. What is it?
Year Zero, and it's Volume Zero. There's two other volumes of it so far.
So go to your local comic book shop, you know, when you're picking up your typical trades and issues there. Why don't you go over to the AWA aisle, pick yourself up a Year Zero, because we got the Kingmaker, Nick Eskfryer, right here. Just giving out quotes there. You're going to be on the New York Times soon.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very excited, and we may or may not have more to come. Who knows? We'll see.
Look at that. I love to hear it, man. Good stuff.
Thank you very much. We did not see this coming, so it's a very pleasant surprise.
What a nice surprise on the Bachelor weekend.
Yes, yes, indeed. But that is enough about that. We got a review to an exit survey to get to. Excuse me.
We sure do.
It's morphin' time.
And of course, we're talking about the Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Yes, the synopsis. Sorry.
Don't ruin it.
Jackass.
Why don't you just talk over while this is playing?
Okay.
No, I mean, let's get into the synopsis. Let's go.
Okay. Ethan Hunt and his IMF team must track down a dangerous weapon before it falls into the wrong hands.
Yes, this is written and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, starring Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt, Haley Atwell as Grace, Vin Rames as Luther Stickell. This is definitely going to get flagged, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Simon Pegg as Benji, Rebecca Ferguson as Isla Frost, Vanessa Kirby as the White Widow, Issei Morales as Gabriel. Pom Clemente makes her debut in the Mission Impossible series as Paris. We have Henry Zerny as Kittredge. Shay Wiggum, no relation to Chief Wiggum there, playing Detective Briggs. Greg Tarzan Davis, that can't be right, playing Dagus. That's weird. Okay, and Frederick Schmidt as Zola. I think that's about as far as we need here, but this is a pretty big cast. But what do we got for the box office and critics reception?
By the way, just confirmed, according to his Wikipedia page, his middle name is Tarzan. For the box office and critics reception, we have this hauled in $268 million worldwide, $99 million domestic, including $54.6 million opening weekend, received an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, 96-94 split on Rotten Tomatoes, 4.2 out of 5 on Google reviews, with 94% of Google users liking this movie. That number makes sense. The 4.2 and 94. I don't know if the math adds up, but that makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It works for me. I can't, if it's binary, if Google users like, did you like this movie? I get the 94%. And that kind of falls in line with the Rotten Tomatoes, which is a binary type of thing, right?
Yep.
The 4.2, again, does make sense when you kind of want to dig a little bit deeper at it. Because I think we're kind of in line here. So for the score and tweet length review, 83 out of a 100 for me. I think this has some great action sequences with an intriguing villain that kind of misses the mark. I don't know if they completely landed. Of course, this is part one of a part two story, so maybe they have more time. But Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 is not the blockbuster Tom Cruise sequel that Top Gun Maverick was, mostly due to, I feel like, just stale acting performances. It felt like they were just like hollow lines being delivered at certain points. But I will say, Haley Atwell was a great, great addition. I don't think she had an opportunity in the MCU to be as sexy as she was. Classy sexy, like in this movie. But like, she just felt more buttoned up as Peggy Atwell or Peggy.
Peggy Carter.
Peggy Carter, thank you.
For real, yeah. I will say I've always been, ever since...
I know you have, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Ever since I saw her on Big Show, like, oh, who is this? I will say, though, I think we're a little on different ends of the spectrum with her performance in this movie.
You didn't like her, huh?
I don't think you say she's great. I think she was fine.
Thought you would have been over the moon with her. I was mostly just smitten, but...
Not to get too, you know, in the weeds, but this is what we do. I mean, like, I think she's well written, but I think her acting at times was a little like, wait a minute. Was it her writing? I think it might have been the writing. I gotta watch it again. Something was off, either the writing or her acting, and I can't remember what it was for the life of me right now. That's pissing me off.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll come back to you as we get to the exit survey here. But while you're pondering that, why don't you hit us with the score and tweet length review?
Sure. So we're in we're living in the same apartment building, I think, this time around. I gave this an 85 to your 83. The biggest thing is I think you had more expectations than I did. This surprised me. I've been joking and making fun of this franchise for a little bit with you now calling it, you know, Mission Highly Improbable. Mm-hmm. But the action in this is wild. And honestly, too, the conversation, and I'll talk about this more later, but the conversation around Tom Cruise and like how he does all his stunts, it's just like his own stunts. It just, it enhances the experience for
me. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then the larger premise too, I think is an interesting angle in all this too. I know you say for some of it kind of misses, but I think I'm curious how, as we get into it more, if where you and I kind of differ on this.
Yeah, no. And again, I like this because this is like the whole episode. It's just kind of like battling AI. Like you've been battling AI this week with watching Secret Invasion and then now going to see this. And it's just your ultimate enemy here. So.
See, you know, what's funny, too, is I don't have problems watching those movies because I'm always like this. A lot of times they validate my points. Mm-hmm. But Lauren thinks that like I get like maybe I do get really mad. I don't know. But when I watch some of these like AI or like, you know, robot hyper intelligent stuff, she thinks like it triggers me. I'm like, no, I just like it, I feel validated when I see some of this stuff.
I think you should just before we do the review of the exit survey for Secret Invasion, you got to watch the intro at least once so we can talk about it.
Fine. That's fair. That is fair. I want everybody to know I'm doing it under protest, but I'm also doing it for the good of the show.
I'm fine with that. Play the game under protest. Just make it out there. But back to this movie, did Dead Reckoning live up to the hype for you?
Yeah. And the biggest thing for me, as I guess I spoiled this question already, but for me, like I've seen a good chunk of the Mission Impossible movies. Maybe this is seven. So I've seen probably three, maybe four. I like them. I don't love them, but I really like this one quite a bit. I mean, to give it an 85, I felt very comfortable in that number.
Yeah, I like this movie. Again, I think, like you said, I had a little bit more higher expectations coming into this than you did. And again, I'm looking at this as not even just a continuation of the Mission Impossible series, but almost as like a pseudo Tom Cruise action sequel. Like I kind of mentioned in the review, because it's Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie, who also directed Top Gun Maverick, and they won the box office, and they were the kind of dandies. Was it a year ago now or 2 years ago? And to see this kind of come back with that same duo, with this same type of like big action, practical effects, Tom Cruise doing a lot of the stunts, a classic kind of IP franchise there. And it just didn't quite live up to it. I thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't to the level of Top Gun Maverick.
Sure. Yeah. No, that I definitely agree with. I can't remember what I gave.
Or even Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout, which was the previous one. I don't think it lived up to that as well.
I think I did see that one. I think
Henry Cavill was really good. I was hoping he would be in this at some point. I forget if he dies or not in that movie.
So do you have phases where you like start like having a tough time staying awake during shows, during movies?
Yes. I'm in it currently.
not necessarily because something's good or bad, right?
No, it's just the timing that I put it on. If I put it on like when I go to bed, like this is, I almost shouldn't even do it, you know?
No, I agree with that. But there are times in my life where like I just for some reason can't stay awake during shit. I did it in a John Wick movie and I fucking love John Wick.
Yeah.
But it's why did that happen? I think I did that in Mission Impossible Fallout. I think that was the movie.
That's too bad. They're all available to rent on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Yeah. I have to give some of the other ones a watch, but yeah, Henry Cavill, I'll never forget that like scene from the trailers I always saw where he's like getting ready to fight him. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's really good at it. And then just kind of in that vein there, where does this rank among the other Mission Impossible movies? I'll start. I know you haven't seen them all. Definitely above the first two. I think there's a clear delineation between the first two and then from three through now seven, four through six, when you get to the Rogue Nation, Ghost Protocol, and Fallout. Those, I think, are the top tier. I really love MI3 with Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain. I think that's a really, really good movie.
That was
But it's in that same second tier with Mission Impossible 3.
Gotcha. I do remember the Philip Seymour Hoffman one. I don't remember a lot, but I remember him being in it, and that was some good shit.
I think that might have been John Woo who directed that movie, so he's a really good action director. Face Off, a couple other things.
Gotcha. Okay. So, I don't know the franchise as well as you do, so I liked it. I enjoyed it. Like, this is the one that impressed me the most, but I think I'm also at an age now, and we've been doing this long enough where I can – in the whole Tom Cruise conversation has, like – after seeing what he did in Top Gun and then seeing some of the crazy stunts he has here, I just grew to appreciate it a little bit more. So, yeah.
anyone who's willing to push to the extremes of their craft, I think you have to appreciate that, you know, no matter who they are, the type of person that they are, you know, it's like when you're witnessing greatness, that's why we can make that separation of someone committing horrible acts off field or off court and then perform at great levels on the court or on the field. And it's like, wow, you still kind of marvel at like a Tyreek Hill type, not to compare those two, but it's like that similar type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So let's do most rewatchable scene. What was the most rewatchable scene for you?
You know what? This one had quite a few good ones. I feel like when we talk about Marvel movies or DC movies, there's usually like one that we kind of agree on more so, but like we have a couple, three between us, and it's like, you could go with any one of them. So the alley fight was really, really cool between Harris and Ethan. I thought Palm Clementif was like, this is a huge, huge movie for her. She, like, where we've just known her really as Mantis. I don't know what else she's been in. Then I see her in this role and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is totally different.
And she's kind of got that like Ryan Gosling vibe where she's like menacing without saying any words. Like, she's just kind of like always lurking quietly in the background. You're like waiting for her to do something.
Yep, 100%. And then, so that was real. I love that fight with her. I love anytime she was on screen. The other one for me that was big was the train ending. I mean, that was just, that was friggin' nuts the way they shot that. I haven't seen any interviews. Have you, like, how did they film that? It's like your crew's doing all the stunts and stuff.
Yes, what was really interesting, so that coincides with the big piece of marketing behind it of the stunt with the dirt bike jumping it off, right? He actually did that and did it multiple times, I think, you know, jumping off a huge ramp into nothing, into a valley pretty much. But that coincides right with this train scene, and I don't think there were any decommissioned trains that they could buy that they could just blow up. So what they did, they had the effects crew there, the set crew, actually build a train from scratch.
Whoa.
And they ran it on the tracks. I think they actually filmed it like while they were doing it on there.
Jeez. Okay. So wow.
Obviously they use CGI. I think when they have like some of the overpass stuff, you know, or like the overpass lights that are coming that they have to kind of duck around. Like, I think that's all CGI'd, but
sure.
I think they were actually on a moving train.
Gotcha. So the part like the whole train stuff in general was interesting, but I'm specifically talking about
how the
train was falling down and the way they were climbing up it. That was nuts. And it's like every fucking thing they had to get through. It's like, oh, they got through. Nope, not done yet. Oh, they got through. Nope, not done yet.
I agree. I think that whole train sequence, because the train is like the end of the movie pretty much, right? So that's what I thought we meant by that. But that, I think you go with that whole extended train sequence from that, from like the jump pretty much to the end when they all make it out there. But
yeah,
I agree. At the ending when it's hanging off the bridge and the carts keep falling down, they got to keep climbing up it, and you got the piano coming down. It's a great anxiety. You're wondering like, all right, they get up there. Oh, you're safe. Okay. No, it's sliding down. Now you got to get back up there. And you kind of feel that moment of calmness and then like immediately right back into a panic state. So I think as the viewer, I kind of felt that. I thought that was really effective.
Yeah. And that's where, with that part specifically, I'm curious how they filmed it. Just because, again, where Cruz wants to do all his stunts, like, this is kind of next level. Like, you can't do something like that.
I know,
But I'm curious how they did that exactly. Because it was so intense, too. And where we're watching this whole movie and we're knowing he's doing all his own stunts, and that's, like, the only thing where, yeah, he's doing his stunts, but it can't be as, like, death-defying as it is in here. Like, that's half the intrigue I have with this stuff from Cruz, this and Top Gun now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other nomination here is the car chase scene with Ethan, Grace, and Paris there. I think that's awesome. And this kind of gave me Civil War vibes with what's his name? With Frank Grillo.
Frank Grillo, yeah, Crossbones.
Crossbones, thank you there. In that kind of opening scene where Paris has that huge armored truck and it's just rolling through everything, and she's like menacing driving behind them. I just thought that was really effective through that city. Like the color palette felt similar to me, even though they were in Venice compared to like a Middle Eastern country and Civil War. I don't know. I got a lot of parallels from that. Sure. And I really enjoyed that. I love a good car chase scene anyway. They go to the little Fiat 500 and it's like, I don't really know if it's like a souped up car or not, but I thought that was a really fun scene. They're handcuffed throughout it, so that adds another layer.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun. A lot of
it,
fun.
I'm big on like spaceship, like fights and stuff like that, but car stuff, I'm not always as big on, but you're absolutely right. I really, really enjoyed the dynamic between Cruise and Atwell. And that was great. And like when she starts like spinning around and shit like that,
that
was awesome. But yeah. And then again, like Paris, Palm Clemente, I'm probably butchering her name, but she was terrifying in the course of all that. Like we talk about where she's like can be quiet and menacing and, you know, does a great job with that. She also, wasn't she laughing in the course of the driving sequence?
Yeah, pretty much. She's like kind of smiling at Haley Atwell, Grace, there when she's doing the spin outs, like you said there. So it's like, oh, you're giving me time. My car's stalling out. Like, all right, let's get to work here.
Yeah, she's awesome. But
it worked out well. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do you think will age the best from this movie? There's a couple of choices here, I think.
So I think one of the like a larger, maybe more macro, I've talked about these two points a lot, but the first one is, you know, the whole thing with Cruise and him doing his own stunts. I mean, for me, that's just going to like, I think as I go back and look at more of Tom Cruise's stuff and maybe things I haven't watched as much, I'm going to grow to appreciate it more because of the way the conversation has popped up between after Top Gun and then, you know, in the time that Mission Impossible came out. So I think that's huge. And I think as more and more people hear that conversation again, even if he doesn't go and do another Top Gun or another Mission Impossible, which obviously we know one more is coming out, that is just going to be huge for him if he decides to do a few more things as he works through his midlife crisis.
I think he looks kind of old. His face looks a little like puffy and swollen.
It's funny because I know you had noticed somewhere about that video, the thing he has recorded before the movie. He looks a little bit older there, but he doesn't look as like puffy. I feel like the puffy was more de-aging for the movie.
Oh, I could see that. Okay. All right. That might make sense then. Yeah, absolutely.
But then go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I'm on board with Palm Clemente's acting career. I hope she kind of, this is a good launching board for her.
100%. I love the character, love what she did. She did an outstanding job, flawless performance. And I seriously, like, we saw her as Mantis, and yeah, sure, she's interesting, but she's very out there, a very odd character. She did a good job in that, but she showed so much range being able to go from that to Paris, and this character is fucking awesome. So I would love to see her in more of these roles, but now I'm like, what else can she do? Because she's shown some dynamicism.
No, I'm with you on that. And actually, just to kind of build off your point, just the marketing trailers that show Cruise doing, you know, again, the dirt bike jump and the fight on the moving train, and those corresponding scenes from it. So I think those were aged the best. But like you said, like in an era where everything is so CGI heavy, and you know when it's CGI or a green screen or a blue screen, and even if it looks good, you can kind of tell. I think it's so easy to go back and do these simple things and go analog with it. And actually, I say it's simple, but you know, these practical effects and actually doing the stunts that people, again, appreciate it, and that gets them to come out in the movies. Yeah. Because if you just saw Tom Cruise jumping off a hill or what, a mountaintop or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's CGI, it was a stunt man. And that's normally what you think. That's not going to necessarily be the selling point of the movie. It might be cool to see, but now that you know that Tom Cruise did that, like that's getting me into the theater a little bit more.
Yep, 100%. Could not agree more. It's a crazy selling point.
You mentioned Palm Clemente. If we talked about her at length, I thought Haley Atwell was good. We might be at odds on this one, but I thought she was great. I thought she was nice. I thought she offered a little bit of a. Again, wholesome sex appeal in this. There was nothing like gratuitous to it, but she had a general sexiness to her.
Yes.
Which again, like going when she's playing Peggy Carter, she's all buttoned up a little bit, top collar buttoned, the hair is all kind of done up in a certain way to look prim and proper. Mm-hmm. Here she's like she's the thief. So she's got like this kind of rogue mentality about her, which I was here for.
So free I spirit. Think Yeah, and I look. So I did get a chance to think about this in the course of our talking. And so when you look at her as Peggy Carter, I think she did a good job as Peggy Carter. I think Peggy Carter is well written. Mm-hmm. I think that Haley Atwell's Grace in this movie is well written. I do think I like the thief and all that. And obviously, yeah, she's an attractive woman, and everything, of course. And I'm sure for her career too, this will still be helpful because there's going to be positive response to her. But I think that the the conflict with this character and how she's like kind of like trying to figure out where she fits in everything and trying to survive and trying to trust Ethan and the team. I think it's well written. I think she's just clunky about it at times. That's my issue.
So what I found weird is when towards the end, when Tom is like, you go to Kitteridge after this is all said and done and tell him that, you know, I chose to accept this and that you trust me or whatever. I don't know why he trusts Kitteridge or what's Kitteridge's deal in all this, because he's on the train at the end,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how she gets involved and you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I wonder about her involvement in that. And part of me thinks, cause like, he seems like such a slime ball. He is in Kitteridge, is that he's going to hire Grace, Haley Atwell's character, to now go after or to like double cross Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, no,
that's my thought, but I don't know. Maybe. The whole thing seemed a little not fully laid out. And again, yeah. This is part one of a two-part movie. So
sure. That's an interesting dynamic that I actually did not think about. Was I did think like how it was odd that he sent him there, but I was like, he doesn't trust somebody, trusts him to value her talents. But my thing was more like when you have the scene where they're trying to convince her or they're talking to her about like, you need to go on the train and you're going to do this stuff. And you got to trust me that I care about your life more than my own life.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of all that, it's just like the way she's waffling back and forth, it makes sense, but I just felt like she was conflicted about her own lines. That's what was odd
to me. I see. Okay.
That's where the delivery wasn't the best it could be.
Well, we'll get into the line delivery a little bit and what age the worst took. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Maybe not with her specifically, sure. but overall towards the movie. But AI as a villain on what age the best. This is the new hot topic here. You know, of course, AI and artificial intelligence and everything has been an aid of villains in past movies, but now not as like the featured villain, which I thought was an interesting, interesting idea to play with. I'm not sure if it was fully executed well because it is such a nebulous idea. It's so abstract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I agree. Like this is, it's coming back. Like AI is on the way back because it's actually here now.
Yeah. Yeah. And to hear now, of course, this is just movie making lines here, but to have the dialogue of the major leaders in the country and the major military politicians, all those people talk about how they're all developing their own, you know, blacklisted advanced AI weapons machines. And it's a battle for trying to build up the best mm-hmm. one. That's very scary.
Yeah.
Of how they could just, again, manipulate our whole Twitter feed. And we wouldn't be none the wiser of what's happening.
Yep. I mean, I don't think you've been like beating your chest about being pro AI, but like, you know, I've been like very harsh on like, I don't like this stuff. Like, I'm again, not saying it can't be a useful tool, but you're asking to trust a lot of people who you don't know when you're creating this thing to go and use it the way it should be used.
Yes.
There's a lot wrong. A lot can go wrong with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, absolute power corrupts absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not everybody's Spider-Man.
Yeah. That's true. That's a great point. What do you think is going to age the worst from this?
So I am very comfortable in giving this an 85. I do wonder like the rewatchability of this movie, because as much as I'm going to enjoy the stunts, as much as I'm going to enjoy the action, like with Palm Clemente, the car chase scene is a great point. I just wonder, like, there's quite a few twists throughout this movie that we get, and they're all good twists. But I feel like this movie, outside of the action being able to stand alone, the plot is so hinged on all these different twists. Like mm-hmm. Some movies can survive that, or I guess hold up. I don't think this one will hold up in the same capacity.
So what I will say is I think that kind of is the Mission Impossible shtick, though, is that there's lot of twists and turns. You always take the mask off at the end, and it's like, oh, my God, it was Ethan Hunt this whole time. It was this guy. And you never really see. So I can see how that maybe wears thin. But I feel like that is kind of the shtick of the franchise there. But what on the line delivery note, I was very disappointed by Tom Cruise, the actor. Tom Cruise, the stuntman and all that stuff is great. I'm here for it. That's awesome. You know, give me that every day of the week. But the line delivery just felt very weird. Like when he first comes up and starts talking to Grace in the airport, their whole initial dialogue, like he's like very creepy and she falls for him. She's kind of like flirty and you see like mm-hmm. maybe some sort of attraction there. And he's just like a weird dude with glasses on. Like if a weird dude with glasses just comes up and starts touching, you know, I don't know. Yep. I'm not sure if that plays out in real life. And then he's like doing this weird, like sleight of hand magic game with her. And I'm like, this is stupid. What are we talking about? And then just furthermore, like his desire to be like a Christ-like figure. Really, I wasn't a big fan of, like, when he comes out of the shadows for the delivery guy in the opening scene. That's like way too serious and hokey for me. It's like, hey, I got a special delivery, and they're in some warehouse, and he's like, you didn't say the secret password. And he comes out, and comes out from the shadows, and it's like, all right, come on. And then what you alluded to, saying like, my life is not as important as my friend's life, like, nice theory behind it, but it's a little bit of a hard-o line, you know. I'm not sure if it totally lands there, so I don't know. Aside from the action stuff, it wasn't huge on Cruise's performance here.
That's fair, because I think when I watched as you're going through it, it's all like kind of ringing some bells where I'm thinking, as he goes and talks to Haley Atwell the first time, you know, we find out later that she was sent in, he was her mark.
Right.
You know, and even looking at that, like, she just kind of, like, as much as she pushed back and played games with him, like, at first, like you said, there was a little bit of like flirtation. She didn't hide that. But with Cruise, I understand what you're talking about. Like, yeah, he's like, that's how you're going to go about it.
He's kind of wooden. Like, you can't, because his glasses are so big that you can't really see the expression on his face. And again, it's kind of puffy to begin with. Maybe he's got the Botox there. He can't really smile, but he's just like woodenly delivering the lines. It just wasn't there for me. But now you jogged my memory just when you said that there with the kind of being convoluted with all the twists and stuff. Like, again, Grace being the mark, she was hired by the White Widow to actually do all that. It's like, that is a little, there's a lot of players in here. It's kind of convoluted if you haven't, like, even for me, I've watched all the movies, not recently. So some of this stuff I'm having to kind of like, all right, who's this person again? What's Gabriel's connection? Where was the White Widow involved in? What's her role again?
Yeah.
You know, the other girl, Isla, right? It's like, what, she was in the movies. I remember her. What's her deal? So there's a lot of moving parts. I agree.
There are. Yeah. I will say one thing though, like, because you brought up a point, like, now we know, we bring up the Grace stuff. It's like, well, maybe like there is a second time rewatchability of like, now I know these things. You know, I haven't done that with this movie, but it would be, maybe it's an interesting experience. Like, now you know these things. What else can you pick up? Knowing one of these twists.
I mean, I'm definitely going to rewatch it again ahead of part two. So it's got that going for me.
I agree.
But after that, that one, probably not. Tom Cruise giving a personal message at the start of the movie. Again, this was a Cruise McQuarrie type thing. I'm not here for it, especially when, again, I have a 6:30 start time of a movie. I get there at 6:50 and I still have three trailers and that stupid Regal movie quote commercial. And then I still get that opening message at the start of the movie. Like, all right, we get it, dude. Just get to the fucking movie.
I forgot to tell you, too. I was so, like, flustered about the kids. This was nobody's fault, but they lost power at the movie theater. Like, oh, so no. Everything was on delay. We were, like 30 minutes late seeing our movie.
Oh, no. It was probably someone trying to cut the air conditioning at the Sound of Freedom movie theater. And they're like, no, we just screwed everything up by mistake.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, it was like, yeah, so it but yes, the Tom Cruise thing at the beginning, I was like, yeah, I mean, we've seen it like, was John Krasinski did it with Quiet Place 2.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, you know, that at that point in time, it was like, okay, we're just getting back. Like, we just, like, we had just been in lockdown. It makes sense, mid-lockdown. Now it's like, you don't need to do it anymore. Like,
all right, get over yourself, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the conversation trying to outsmart AI and just getting, like, paralysis by analysis, that whole conversation was kind of annoying. It's like, no, AI knows that we're going to do this, so we got to do this. But they also know that we're going to do this, so we got to do this. Gosh. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's when Luther... who's Simon Pegg's character name? Why can't I remember his name? They're all talking and trying to, like, Benji. Get their head around this.
Yeah.
What's that? Benji. Thank you.
I'm Benji. You're Luther.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But I agree. Like, it's weird because when I heard that, I felt I had a different reason why it was weird for me. I heard that, I'm like, wait, I know Tom Cruise is smart, but now you're going to tell me he's going to go and be as smart as artificial intelligence?
Yeah, really? No, they can't keep the artificial intelligence is afraid of Ethan Hunt. That's why they hired Gabriel.
this is true. It is afraid of him. And I mean, I get it to it. I get it being afraid, but you're going to tell me he's going to be just as smart?
Yeah. And again, this is where like the Nebula stuff kind of comes into play. It gets a little too abstract where it doesn't work for me. What I will give it credit for, though, it's like when Benji and Luther are trying to guide Ethan through a room or whatever, or through the city, right? And AI then takes the voice recognition of Luther and Benji and just starts guiding him out of the way.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. I was like, oh man, that's pretty crazy that they can do that.
I really like that. And I also fucking hated that. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, this is the shit that can friggin' happen. I mean, obviously this is all like, you know, fictionalized and everything, but it's like, fuck man, that felt too real. But
you
can
do that. They've done it with the Joe Rogan podcast. Joe Rogan has said every word every which way over his, I don't know, like 2,000 episodes that are 3 hours a piece. So like they have this whole audio library where you could just, again, make them say whatever you want.
I heard Spotify was doing stuff like that. I think it was Ben Simmons. I saw a picture of him like with the article where they were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Spotify is trying to like use like voices from people who are podcasters on their platform, and they want to use it for, I think, ads. And it's like, okay, you're doing it for ads, but then where the hell does it end?
Yeah. I saw something else that was Barack and Michelle Obama giving like certain like LGBT books, their recommendation and going through and reading them in detail of what it is. And it's all deepfake. It's not it's a video.
I was just about to say that could totally happen. Like that's
you don't, and that's the former president. Like how much weight does that carry? I think even some podcasts have done ads that are being like Joe Rogan reading an ad about their podcast or about their product or something like that. You know,
man, this is just like the thing is like, this is just the start of it all. Like these are little things, like you know, having AI go and impersonate like high profile people like that is actually pretty next level. But it's like these are the things that can happen, and there's so many worse things though that we can get from all.
Sure, that's just minor stuff, right? And that's still kind of amazing. I'm with you on that. It is kind of crazy when you start to go down the rabbit hole there.
I'm honestly glad they talked about that in this movie. Like, and mm-hmm. I would like to see more of it because I don't think it's the worst thing if people are afraid of this.
No, absolutely. You should have a healthy fear.
Yeah,
healthy fear. Mm-hmm. Who had the best performance by a side character?
Paris. She was.
We'll without question. I thought she was the big winner of that. Yeah. I'm not sure how much more time we have to put into her there. No. Definitely got a lot of flowers there, but I will give some love for Luther. He's been a guy who's been around since definitely the third one, maybe the second one as well. I can't really recall, but I thought he was really great. And it was kind of like a voice of reason throughout this whole movie for Ethan. He kind of had it all figured out.
Yeah. He was very good. And we kind of, he kind of left towards the end of it all too, right?
Because he has to go off the grid because he's got to figure out what this is. So he's got to try to figure out how to beat it.
So it looks like Mission Impossible. He was in the first Mission Impossible.
He was in the first. Okay. All right.
1996. Awesome. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He was in that one for sure.
And the way that he was talking, he kind of reminded me of the black inmate in The Dark Knight when they're all on the boat at the end when the Joker wants to blow up the two boats and he goes up to, he's in handcuffs or he's a huge guy, right? And he's like, you've never taken a life, so how can you be, you know, handle how to make this decision? Let me do it. And he ends up throwing it out. Mm-hmm. Kind of had that similar type of voice to it there. So I kind of like a soothing, raspy voice. Deep, raspy voice. It worked for me.
You know what's funny is that actor who plays the inmate, I don't know what else I've seen him in, but
he's been in a bunch of stuff.
He is. He's one of those kind of guys?
Yeah.
Okay, because he seems familiar. Okay, got it.
I think
okay.
I might be confusing a different actor, but he's got kind of like the wonky eye.
He does, but I didn't know if that was like just deliberate. Like with
no, I think he does have that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah,
but anyway, that's the kind of similar vibes there. So I did like Luther. Wasn't a big fan of Simon Pegg, who looks kind of sickly in this movie.
Yeah, I think that's actually fair. I think I did that thought crossed my mind. Like, he looks a little
gaunt.
I can't remember last time I saw him
in anything. Yeah, but yeah, that's not a good point.
He's not a huge Simon Pegg guy, but still.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe some people didn't do too well during the pandemic, right?
I guess so. Yeah.
Lost the movie, Nick, aside from Simon Pegg's looks?
Okay, so we talked about this a little beforehand, but I'd never heard that the IMF fully spelled out and like fully like fledged out, whatever the name of it is, the Impossible Mission Force. That's terrible.
And that's really bad. And again, like the scene, although I thought it was kind of funny when you have Kreditch and the national
the head security of like security director,
guy. The guy with the glasses who ends up getting killed by Gabriel there. They're all kind of explaining what Ethan Hunt is and what he does and what the IMF team does. Mm. I thought it was very stupid, but I also thought it was kind of funny. They're like, wait, when you can't do something, you just ask someone else to do it and that's it. And then they get it done.
That's fair in that, like, because I know you said that you talked to Mac and it was like there's a little bit of hokiness there. That's fair. But at the same time, when you say the name the Impossible Mission Force, I get it. Maybe that's from the original show because that's where this all stems from. Fine. At the same time, like, you want to use that still? You got to poke fun at it. In 2023, you have to know, like, if you're going to use a shit name like that, you know what your movie title is? You got to poke fun at it. At least you can use it, but just don't leave it alone.
I agree. This might be better for what age the worst. I just had this now and I just lost it. This was on the spot thing. Oh man, that's bad. But who lost the movie was Humanity. I thought Humanity was really bad here. This bad look, can't handle power. Who lost the movie? The opening scene in the sub. I thought that was very weird. I thought that was convoluted. We didn't really know much at the time when they're showing that. So when you see
it was odd.
Like what am I trying to say? This is a submarine missile.
Torpedo.
When it's going, torpedo. Thank you. It kind of has a mind of its own. It's getting redirected and like, there's one submarine that's kind of spotting up at different spots and it's like close and then it's far. I didn't really get all that. I thought that was kind of jarring way to enter the movie. Mm. That's just me.
I actually liked it. Like it was strange. And then when we get to it later, it's like this AI where they left a little bit of a breadcrumb with the way the eye set up. I was like, oh, okay. Like now I know what the hell happened there. But it was like after it was done and then you jump to the Ethan stuff, I was like, okay, what was the point of the sub stuff? So I will say that. There's that, but it was odd. But I enjoyed the whole, like, what actually happened was very interesting.
I was intrigued, but I was kind of like, how does this all piece together?
Yep.
And I also thought the weird synchronicity of the Ocean Gate submarine exploding to having the Mission Impossible opening scene also being a submarine that explodes and compresses underwater was very weird.
That's, yeah. I wonder how many people have made that, like,
This is a weird thing too. Have you heard the stuff that was going on with like Jamie Foxx? How he had some sort of issue, kind of like maybe similar to Damar Damar Hamlin.
With
a lot
of
people speculating whether it was vaccine related or whatever.
I didn't know that part.
Well, yeah, so that's what everyone was speculating, and he just came out with this a video, right? And then people are saying like he looks so again a little bit more gaunt. He actually looks lighter in complexion. So people were saying, like, is this guy a clone? They were saying that this whole time. And now he has a number one movie on Netflix called, like, Something Clone.
Oh, really?
It's all about clones. And I'm like, this is a weird synchronicity.
That is.
Like, almost like all of this was organized by an AI intelligence that would know that people would get up in arms over this sort of reaction. So let's keep Jamie Foxx away for an extended period of time. Say he was in an accident, maybe throw in some vaccine conspiracy theories to it and just get some drum up attention for this movie. Then the week that it's going to be released, we'll send a new photo up out there.
Who are the other?
I don't know. That's real guerrilla marketing.
It is. That's some next level conspiracy thinking on your end. But I'm curious. What you've got me thinking about now is, when I think of like celebrities who supposedly died and then were replaced by somebody else, the first person I think of is Paul McCartney. I didn't know this till I was older, But Paul McCartney, now apparently Jamie Foxx, and then Avril Lavigne is the other one who that comes up with.
Yeah. Oh,
is
yeah.
Is there anybody, I don't put you on the spot here, is there anybody else that you're aware of that there's like that thought process around?
No, maybe this is more literal. I do believe all the presidents and top political leaders in the world have body doubles. And that they may not be like the Trump that you see running around at the UFC shows and stuff like that, may be a body double, you know, or something like that. Or like maybe Biden, you know, 80-year-old Biden, like maybe he's too tired or isn't well enough to go to some speaking arrangement in Podunk, Iowa or something like that, you know. So let's send the body double out there, because they really do. Saddam Hussein had so many body doubles. I think Zelensky right now has body doubles. It's just like, it's not like a conspiracy theory, almost. Yeah, it's just like a smart tactic. Like, all right, if you have people after you, let's send multiple people elsewhere, just kind of keep them off the trail.
No, that makes kind of perfect
sense. So I think that stuff definitely happens. Okay. But the clone stuff, I think you got most of them there.
Yeah.
I have to listen to Coast to Coast AM there. That's like the preeminent conspiracy theory alien show. I forget who the host is, but that's Tim Weisberg. I think he's appeared on that show a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Supernatural, paranormal, conspiracy.
Right. Yeah. They're all kind of like, they have, there's a cross section.
It's all under the umbrella of something there. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's who lost the movie there. Who won the movie, Nick? Who won the movie?
Again, bringing her back. So where Paris was the winning, the best performance by a side character, Palm Clementif, I think, is going to be the big winner coming out of this movie, because her performance was outstanding. So different than Mantis. And again, I don't know if I'm speaking correctly for you, Wes, but we haven't seen her in anything besides Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
No, I mean, not that I have. Right. I think we can, you and I can both say that. But maybe she's been in something else and we just haven't seen it. But I like this. Again, to make another Immaculate Grid reference, this is the Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same award, right? It's the Ichiro. It's the Ichiro Suzuki. Yep. It's maybe winning the Cy Young and the MVP, like Justin Verlander, you know, all that good stuff.
Pedro got screwed out of that one year. Looking, like when Verlander got it, it's like, I'm not saying Verlander didn't deserve it, but if Pedro didn't get it, then Verlander shouldn't have gotten it.
And that was the 99 season. Wasn't it like Ivan Rodriguez or Juan Gonzalez or something like that? Someone from Texas won it that year.
I think it was Pudge. I honestly forgot Juan Gon won it one year. That's a name that like...
it's a good one. That's a good name to store.
One of the great things about the Immaculate Grid has been like the names that you just don't think of and like other people think of, or then like on your own, like you dig deep into the recesses of your brain. It's like, holy shit, where did I pull that guy from?
Yes, absolutely there. So yeah, I'm on board with Palm Clementif. I'll throw out though AI, because they might have won. I mean, they won this part of the movie.
Yeah, this part of the movie they did. That's for sure.
And just shout out to Tom Cruise and as the stuntman doing the practical effects, doing the stunts. Mm-hmm. We love
very
that
cool stuff. Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, so Mission Impossible. Wait for it, guys. Wait.
No.
So Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. Nick gives it an 85 out of 100. I give it an 83. That's an aggregate score for CMM. Let's see, carry the one of an 84 out of 100 there. I always like when we're in the same neighborhood. So, hey, listen, go to the theater. How about Tom Cruise? He'll give you a personal message if you buy a ticket to it. That much I guarantee you. Because right now it's got a big drop-off. But that's the Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 exit survey brought to you by CMM Podcasts.
Look at that. Wow.
That's good stuff, huh? How about that?
This is why you guys got to listen to the audio version of the show. This is going to
get flagged. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Choo-choo, bitches.
All right, so we've had a little bit of time to catch up on some things after having a week off here. So I'll just shout out, I've been watching It's Always Sunny season 16. Not the greatest thing. If we look back to season 7, it's good. But season 7, when Matt got fat, that whole premise was around the idea that after a certain amount of time, characters on TV shows get very beautiful and almost like too good looking for their characters or their roles that they play. And that's where they're at currently. So they mocked that in season 7. And then another 8 or 9 seasons later, they're just fully become what they mocked. So it's a funny show. This most recent episode of Dennis Takes a Mental Health Day. Very good. Very relatable. So I really like that. And The Righteous Gemstone season 3 might be the best season to date. I really, really like this show. Big fan. Shout out to BJ. Maybe one of the better side characters in HBO history, at least from a comedy standpoint. Big fan of his.
I feel like I heard of this recently, but I've never watched.
Oh yeah. Danny McBride, Adam Levine, Adam Devine. Who else is in there? John Goodman. It's good stuff.
Okay. That's an interesting cast right there. Okay.
Walton Goggins. Yeah. It's good.
Stuff. Okay. He's nuts. Okay, cool. Yeah,
Billy Baby's Bible Thumpers.
As for me, I mentioned already that we went to see Barbie, but I also watched the Adam Eve special episode from Invincible that came out, I think, on Saturday. Good, like, background on the character of Eve. I think if you really, really liked the Invincible show, it's a must watch. I think if you liked it, but weren't like, oh, I'm dying for this season 2, then, you know, you don't have to watch it. You know, it gives you background on the character. It's some interesting stuff. You get to know her personality more and how she became who she is. There's definitely
some good primer.
Stuff. Yeah. But I would say, yeah, I liked it. I don't know if you need to go watch it though, Wes.
Okay. I like that. That's good stuff. That's good stuff here. And we got a jam-packed DSG list of topics this week. Very, very maybe controversial topics.
That is true. So on Mac and Goo, Wes is on the news dump this week. We also got Barbie featuring DJ Bean. I think Goo did that episode with him.
Yes.
Then we've got I've Heard It Both Ways season 6 episode 4 of Psych is what's on up next for them. TLDR, I mentioned we're going to be doing a Boom book, an Image book, and then San Diego Comic-Con stuff. And then, Wes, I'll make sure the streamers, too. We have Doc at Backtrack, at Shime, at Shime Time. And then Dork does all their video game playing on the hashtag Dork YouTube page. They also, this week, talked about they started their top 50 TV shows conversation rankings. They did 50 through 26, and this is DSG extended list.
Yes. Yes, and I don't know if it was supposed to be extended or if it was just extended to us, and then he extended it further to get the results that he was hoping for.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe, but I don't know. There could be some election fraud going on here. That's all I'm saying.
It was I don't want to spoil anything, but there was information that we found out in the process where I was just like, oh, okay, like I'm just on a different wavelength than everybody else here. Like, I'm not like good or bad. I'm just, I know that or to some extent, but like blown away. I'm talking about.
If I could offer some opinions on this here real quick, to do a top TV, to call it the top 50 TV shows of all time, which I think is the title there. Doesn't make sense because you need to have everybody watch every show ever, because then you're just not going to get a fair list there, right? Or an accurate list. So if you go with favorite 50 TV shows of all time, I think that's probably better wording there, but that's just the editor in me. Also, you know, maybe this is a good idea when you've run out of content ideas and you don't have an idea for an episode. So you have everyone else do the work for you, and then you spend an hour just shitting on everyone's ideas.
I don't know.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, it's not crazy, but people love when we do the crossover stuff. Someone just reached out about that route to me recently. And then B, you know, from SEO standpoint, like people look for top stuff versus favorite stuff. You know,
I agree. But if you're going to ask us to do top, you know, put a list together. No,
I also agree with the point of, I haven't. Okay, here you go, everybody. I have never watched The Wire. Not because I don't like it, but when we do our show, we have to prioritize certain things.
I've never seen The Sopranos.
I've never seen The Sopranos. I've never watched Boardwalk Empire. There are shows that are on this list that I've never watched. And it's like, I've seen The Simpsons, but I didn't see The Simpsons like Billy and you would have Prime. So it's just, there's a lot of gaps. And that's part of why I kind of like the list, because it shows a range of two kind of like generations, but it's still like, it's still like, I have two significant one like spots on my list that those movies, those shows did not make it.
One and three, is that what you're talking about? That thing? Yeah.
I'm not going to say what shows they were, but I am blown away by one of them. I kind of logicked it out afterwards, but the other one, I'm like, how the fuck is this not on the list? I'm kind of curious if I'm the only person who had it on the list.
So, you'll have to remind me off air when we get off air, but which it was, because I can't recall there, but listen, it's fine. You know, just make people take time out of their summer day, their work day, their bachelor party, in some cases there, right? To put a list together, to get it in on time, to make an effort to try to help you, and then just kick everyone while they're down. You know, that's...
I guess...
Some might call that elitist BS.
Well, someone's popping shots. Someone's ready to go.
No, they don't listen to this anyway. I can say whatever the fuck I want there.
Whatever the hell we want.
The other thing is the triple D slander is something I will not stand for there. You can hate on Guy Fieri, but if you don't watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives because you don't like Guy Fieri, you're missing the point of the show. And again, I might say that's elitist bullshit.
Do you watch it? Is it on your list?
I love that show.
Okay. I've never watched it. I mean, I'm not a big food.
If you don't watch it, you don't watch it. But I'm saying have ill will towards it. Like, it's objectively a great show. And maybe you just don't support local business.
Oh, that's why you said that. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Now I understand. Okay. That's funny. Well, you guys can catch that episode. And then they're going to be doing 25 through number one after Secret Invasion week, which is what's coming up for all of the DSG, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that'll be good stuff. But yeah, I just wanted to get that off my chest here. You know, I just had some hot takes to spew.
You feel good? You feel better?
I feel better. I don't know if I feel good. but next week I will feel good about the episode we're doing next week as a crow flies. I believe that's going to be Secret Invasion, right? We're good on that.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, until then, folks, thank you for tuning in and staying with us as always. You know, we took a little 1 week break here, but we're back at it like crack addicts. So till then, same bat time, same bat place.